Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Randy Fine, your show host. Each of us at some time or other in our life, or maybe all throughout our lives, our life has pondered the question, who are we and why are we here? Well, today you might just get some answers, or even better, learn how and where to find those answers. We have with us today Ellen Todd, author of the book, The Infinite View, A Guide for Life on Earth. She is an internationally known clairvoyant counselor who has been teaching and counseling for more than 30 years. She is widely respected for the integrity of her work, the accuracy of her perceptions and guidance, clarity and usefulness of her teaching. Her work has been supported by the Edgar Cayce Foundation, the Marian Institute, Deepak Chopra, Child Spirit Institute, the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and the Boston Center for Adult Education, among others. Her work has been covered in Newsweek, and she has lectured across the country. Her first book, Death and Letting Go, appeared on the Boston Globe bestseller list. Now, I said that Ellen is a clairvoyant. She will not be doing readings today. We're really going to be talking about how, like I said in the beginning, what life is about, what the meaning of life, and how we can find it for ourselves. So if you've called in, just sit back and listen, because you're going to learn more that way. So let me introduce my guest to you today, and we'll get started. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning, Randy.
It's so, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
So we're going to be talking about your book, The Infinite View. And you were led by your guide or guides to write this. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, I think I should give a little background. I was a sensitive child. I had visionary experiences and out-of-body experiences as a child. I was raised by my father, who was a physicist, and I grew up in a scientifically oriented household, and he thought I had a vivid imagination. But I knew the experiences that I was having were real, so I felt a lot of anxiety. And I also grew up with a mother who had a severe case of MS, and so I had a lot of fear about being a sensitive, and at any moment something terrible could happen. My watershed event was that my mother came back and talked to me after she died. I was 19 and I was searching, and she brought me a profound message. She said, no matter how things appear, first she said, do not mourn for me. She said, no matter how things appear, if you look deeply, you'll see there are always reasons and there's justice. So she demonstrated to me that there was life after death, and she helped me to not be afraid of my sensitivity. It was like a veil was lifted. And after that, I started to allow my clairvoyance to develop. And pretty quickly after that, I started being contacted by beings in the spiritual world who became my teachers. And they taught me how to be a sensitive in an insensitive world, and they trained me. And so so they really gave me tools and techniques. And my book, The Infinite View, really is a combination of my personal narrative and the fundamental teachings that they gave me in this beginning training period.
Wow, that's great. I mean, thank you for that explanation. And that is very important to go back and explain how all this began. And what a message to get from the other side. So concise, but so profound. It is just, if we all grow up knowing that in our hearts, in our souls, in every fiber of our being, wow, how much easier life would be for us. Did you want to say something?
I was just going to say that it was particularly powerful for me because my mother had a very difficult life. So she was really saying this was true for her. And so that really helped me to feel this tremendous rebirth. My first line in my book is, my mother gave me birth and my mother gave me rebirth. Because after that, I stopped feeling that life was cruel. And I started to ask the fundamental question, why is this happening and what am I to learn from it?
So so your guides that you talked about that have taught you how to use your gift have given you concepts and practices that you have integrated into your life. And you've even tested them, you say in your book. And what I found interesting is when you said guides don't set out instructions or recipes to be followed to the letter. Instead, they tell us where and how to look. We must do the looking and decide what we see. And I think that's so important, very important statement, because some people like to go to psychics and clairvoyants and, you know, mediums, and because they want the answers. But
yes,
we're told... we're not told the answers. It's not, doesn't come across that clearly, right, Ellen?
Well, you know, when I really learned that I had this ability, clairvoyance and clairaudience, I had to ask myself, how do I want to use it? And, you know, I grew up with a brother who was a musician, and when we all took music lessons, he naturally excelled. And he had to ask himself, you know, did he want to learn to play the piano or the guitar? And so I realized that I had an ability, and I saw that there were many ways to use it. And because I was raised in an academic environment, I was much more interested in the meaning of life, the deeper philosophical questions. I wasn't as drawn to wanting to give messages from dead relatives, even though that's what transformed my life. I really wanted to communicate with the masters, the teachers, the really knowledgeable beings in the spiritual world who knew more than I did. And so I feel that, you know, that how I was raised impacted how I wanted to use this ability. And so it wasn't about giving people's answers. You know, my guide once said to me, people want to know the future because they're afraid they're not going to get what they want. Instead of telling them the future, help them work through their fears.
Mm. Wow, profound. I like that. He said that the belief that we're all spiritual beings manifesting temporarily on Earth was definitively confirmed for you when you clairvoyantly watched your son incarnate, and that was such a wow moment in your book. Can you talk about that?
Yes, it was a wow moment in my life. So I was pregnant with my second child, and I started to go into labor, and in etheric form, a young man with two older men on either side of him appeared to me in my bedroom at the foot of my bed, and they had golden light all around them. And in the spiritual world, the language is telepathy. And with thought, this young man, who I just knew was going to be my son, said to me in thought, "I've just come to see if you're all right." And I thought to myself, oh, I'm going to have a considerate son and a short labor. And I told him I was. And then I had a very long labor. And I went to the hospital twice. And on the way to the hospital the second time, the same etheric body. And the etheric body looks like the physical, except that it's moving faster. It's like shimmering light. And so here this etheric man appeared in the car, and he was standing up, but he was standing up in the car, and I learned that in the spiritual world, size can vary, communication with thought, travel with thought, and size can vary. So here he was standing up in the car, and at the top of his head and the bottom of his feet, I always say very much like Star Trek, the etheric body dissolved. And then all that was left was a beam of white light that entered into the new child. And in 2 hours, my son was born. And I write about how it was so moving, in part because I realized that everyone, all of us, have done this. We've gone from the spiritual realm into baby bodies. And we go from an unrestricted realm into a very confined body where we're completely dependent on the people around us and our environment to take care of us. And it was remarkable. And, you know, I thought I was going to be a child psychologist before I had my spiritual awakening because I was always interested in human development. And I got to meet both my children before they were born, and then now they're adults. So I got to watch the developmental process, and it was fascinating because I really saw that we are who we are. We are, you know, in typical psychology, it's just we're a product of our environment and our genetics. But I add past life experiences and our spiritual nature to that list. And I really got to see that my children were themselves. And so the important question in raising them was, what do I need to do to help them to actualize their purpose and their nature?
And did you find those answers?
Well, probably need to ask my children, but I do feel that because I could see their previous lives, I was able to see their natural strengths and weaknesses and help guide them. So, you know, I always tell parents, you know, look at the books your children want to read when they're 2 and 3 year olds. Before they've gotten too far into cultural conditioning, because cultural conditioning causes people to forget who they are and why they're here. And these very young ages often remember past lives. They act it out in their play. And the books they're drawn to, my daughter was drawn to Helen Keller and Martin Luther King, which was her nature, interested in justice, interested in you know, making the world a better place. And my son was drawn to Ming Lo Move the Mountain, and everyone knows what a dragon looks like, and everything having to do with China, and now he lives in Beijing. So it's been, I tell parents, be detectives, really observing of your children, because they will tell you in these young ages who they are and what they most need to develop.
So when you had this experience, or had this experience twice actually with your children coming in, did it confirm, change, or create a belief in you that the soul enters the infant's body just prior to birth? How do you feel about that?
My daughter's spirit entered earlier.
Okay.
But not at conception. Absolutely not at conception. I see that the spirit enters after the baby is well formed.
Okay. You say that identity is made up of three aspects. Can you talk about that and sort of explain it a little bit? What are the three aspects of identity?
So my guides taught me early on that everyone has a spirit, and they define the spirit as the spark of the God force. It's our enlightened self. It's the part of us that doesn't change. It's the only part that doesn't evolve. It's the constant. And each spirit has an individual emphasis. My emphasis is wisdom. Another person's may be creativity or love. So this is our essence. And then the soul, they say, is the container of the spirit. The soul is what allows the spirit to have individuality and animation. And the soul is very complicated, where the spirit is simple. The soul contains all of our past life patterns, traumas, talents, skills, fears, our history as a soul. And when we incarnate, we're guided towards parents and circumstance that bring up our learning so we can work on ourselves. I always say we all get set up in our childhood to grow. And then over the soul is our personality, our persona in the world, which is influenced by genetics, conditioning from parents, society, and education, past life influences, and then influence from our spiritual essence. And a really important point I was taught was that our fulfillment comes from the manifestation of our spiritual nature. When our deepest identity gets felt, expressed, and manifested, that's when we feel fulfilled. And this is so key, because culturally we've been taught that fulfillment comes from getting what we want. And then if we don't get what we want, we feel sad or mad or hurt. But if you see fulfillment as self-actualization, then what's most important is how we manifest ourselves.
Very true. Very true. So what is, there's a question I'm going to say. Okay. So, what is oneness, and why is it so important to connect with it?
So even, you know, junior high biology, we know that our arms are not solid. They're energy in motion. And we also know that the space between things is not empty. That, you know, my father was a physicist, and in many ways I think of myself as a metaphysicist. I'm interested in the nature of spiritual reality. And so and to me it's a continuation of the same truth. So we have oneness. We have interconnection. Everything is interconnected. This is what I think our natural environment is trying to teach us in nature, that everything is an ecosystem. It's an interconnected system. And spiritually, I was told that at one point, everything was one, and that the Big Bang, or the explosion of creativity, happened because there was within this oneness a desire to express and create. So here we are in this creative expression called life, and yet this interconnectedness still underlies everything. And so in some ways, you could say that my guides teach that oneness is what they call the good force of life, and it's the God force. And it's not a deity on a throne, but it's this creative life force that is in every aspect of life, including us, and it's the creative force of the universe. And it has these fundamental spiritual principles that hold it all together. And when we live in harmony with those principles, we move into creativity. And when we're not in harmony with these principles, that's when destruction happens, and that we have free will choice. Are we going to harmonize with these fundamental principles such as love and wisdom and balance, or are we and the oneness that envelops all of these principles, or are we not? And unfortunately, we've become such an individualistic culture, and the focus has been so much on getting what I want that there hasn't been enough focus on what is the right thing for the greater good or for the oneness of which we are a part.
Okay, right. Right. You talk about something called the first error, and you sort of relate it to the original sin. Can you explain what you mean by the first error, what that's about?
Yes. I kind of discovered it by accident. I was looking at people's past lives, which I have the ability to do, and I then found that if I kept going back, I could get to a life where a person had no fear, no imbalance, no confusion, that they were in a manifestation of their enlightened self. And then as I traced that forward, there was always, or in all of the circumstances I saw, an initial confusion, an initial fear, an initial fall from grace. And in Christianity, they call that original sin. But what I found in my own visions is it's not the same for everyone. We don't have the same confusion. We don't all have the same root fear. So I started calling it first error. It was the first mistake, the first imbalance. I don't even know why that term flew into my head, but it did. And so what I find is that when people understand what their first error is, it really helps them to see why in their lives there's a repeated pattern. Because this pattern is like our lesson plan. Are we going to get afraid? Are we going to react? Or are we going to shift our attitude and perspective in a way that's necessary to heal this pattern?
And does the first error over the course of lifetimes branch out into other things? I would imagine it does.
Well, it's always the root issue in all of the lives. But certainly, from a root fear, other fears can grow. From a root confusion, other confusions can grow. But the root in our soul is always the same.
Right. And through all the people that you worked with and transgress, is that what it's called, transgress?
Oh, you mean the hand scrying?
Regressed. Okay, that's what I meant
well,
to say.
Well, actually, some people do past life regression where they talk people through it. No, I actually have a visionary ability, so I see it in pictures.
Okay. So through investigating people in the way that you are able to do it, you say you've seen a lot of repetition. What do you see? What is repeating in humanity?
Well, with each soul and each spirit, there's a profound relationship between our spiritual nature and our deepest confusion. So someone who may have a spiritual nature of love may have a fear of not being loved. Someone who has a spiritual emphasis of wisdom may have a fear of ignorance. So there's always an incredible relationship between the two. And so the pattern of strengths and weaknesses I see manifest in different lives, in different costume, culture, race, sex, but the fundamental themes are there, both in the learning process as well as in the creative contribution. My guides say that our spiritual essence is our particular instrument in the orchestra of life. It is our particular contribution to life, and the process of our healing is linked to a misapplication of that spiritual nature. I hope I'm not getting too confusing. It's why I've tried to be really methodical in my book to explain these very deep concepts.
Right, and you are in your book. It is very, very easy to understand. But I do want to expand on it, you know, for the sake of my listeners, because they don't have the book in front of them, although they certainly can, and I hope they do. We'll talk about that at the
Thank
end.
You.
So this dichotomy that we live with, you say in the higher spiritual realms, there is no dichotomy. There's simply oneness. So what is very different? Can you explain what's different between life in the spiritual realm and life here on Earth?
So life in the spiritual world is like a layer cake. There are many different levels of existence. This is where we get the concept heaven, hell, and purgatory. Because in the lower levels, this is where people are stuck in negative attitudes or negative perceptions. And as we move through that into the outer realms or the heavenly realms, we move out of dichotomy. We move out of right, wrong, good, bad, light, dark. And in these outer realms, and, you know, this has been talked about through the ages, the heavenly realms, there's just light, there's just love, there's just clarity and positivity. And this is where, you know, I wrote a little book called Death and Letting Go to help people to understand what's necessary to not get stuck in the spiritual world when we make a transition. So it's actually a very easy formula, but it's important to understand it and to move into the outer realm where it just is like being immersed in positivity. You know, here I always say you can have a saint and a murderer on the same bus. Everybody's together. And this is the challenge because we can be very positive when we get a phone call and then we're negative or something happens we move through up and down emotions. Once someone reaches the outer dimension, it's the environment is so positive that all you have to do is coast. You don't have to work to stay positive. So coming to the earth, part of the learning is to develop an internal strength where we can sustain the spiritual principles in the midst of adversity.
Do we have a personality in the other realm?
Yes, we do. We do have a personality. And it still, the individuality exists in the spiritual world. I know some people think that when you die, you know, we're energy and we go back into this pool of oneness. And I've had too many conversations with individuals who reside in the spiritual world to know that that's not so.
Wow. I got to a part in your book where you said it takes a lot of work to be human. It requires maintenance. And it's funny because several years ago, I wrote kind of a humorous little article about it. But I don't think that many of us stop and think about what it takes to maintain ourselves physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. It is, we do have a lot of work to do on ourselves here, don't we?
Yes, that's right. And I think it's really helpful to remember that the job of being human is a lot of work. And therefore, I think it's so important to be compassionate to ourselves, because it's a big job just being human. And gosh, you know, I often joke, I'm glad I'm not an elephant, because then I'd have to eat more often, you know? I mean, just the process of maintaining our bodies is such a big job. So I think that we're all spirit, and this is our unlimited, magnificent self, but we're also all human, and this is our limited self. This is the part of our character that, you know, really does take a lot of work, and I think it's so important for all of us to remember both, and then we see ourselves in a proper perspective.
True. It helps us to honor this physical, incarnation that we have, which some of us don't like that physical incarnation. They don't like a lot of things about it. But it's really, I think, part of the contract is really to honor who we are in this physical incarnation.
Yes. My guides say you're here to learn, you're here to enjoy, and you're here to contribute. That enjoyment part is so important, because it's what rejuvenates us in the process of learning and contributing.
And, you know, my thought, I'm not clairvoyant, very spiritual and very well read, but I believe that we cannot come here alone, and that the spiritual realm would not let us come here alone, because it is such a difficult place, and that we do need advisors on the other side. Is that true?
Well, we all do have help from the spiritual world, no question, in my mind. I talk about the importance of opening the crown chakra in the chakra system, which is the energy system in the etheric body. The crown is at the top of the head, and it's the bridge from the material to the spiritual dimension. And this is the center that must be opened in order to receive guidance. And it's opened through inspiration, trust, and devotion. And I usually tell people to focus on inspiration, because it's the easiest for the most people, but it's so key. And I tell a story in my book about my father, who said he started a research project by lying in bed and listening to classical music. And then the classical music, he didn't understand the mechanism, but my explanation is the classical music inspired him. It opened his crown chakra, and then he would receive information from his guides, which he said were the very best ideas he ever got, and then he'd go to the library and research them. So it's a repeatable technique that I've taught to large numbers of people. You open the crown through inspiration, then your guidance can get through. If the crown is closed because of worry, discouragement, or fear, then it's very hard for them to get through.
Yeah, and in the book, just to those who are listening, in the book, Ellen does guide you through the process of opening that crown chakra, as well as the third eye. So we may be receiving information, or we may be, let's just say, information is being transmitted to us, but we may not be able to recognize it. Do you believe it's always being transmitted to us? It's just a matter of opening up to be able to receive it?
Well, I think, yes. I think a lot of times people have an idea, they think it's theirs, and it's
right.
Not.
Right.
I think a lot of people get good ideas in the shower, and having that nice warm water on the crown chakra feels good, and it creates a moment of inspiration, and then, you know, the good ideas come. So my guides always say, you know, important ideas are always a group effort.
Yeah, I, you know, and
Yeah, we do have to. I mean, I know that with myself, I've learned to recognize my thought, what my thoughts are, and how they're different from what is being told to me or suggested to me. And it takes practice to be able to figure out the difference between the two, because they're sometimes feels very much the same. It's funny what you said about the shower, because when I've written three books, and my best writing comes in the shower, which is so frustrating, because I'll be writing for hours and I'll be like, oh, I can't write anymore. And I get up, I get in the shower, and then I'm flooded with thoughts. And so I have to take paper and pen in the shower, and it's all wet. But it's so true that so much flows in the shower besides water.
So if you open your crown chakra consciously, you won't have to do it in the shower.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I have that part of your book bookmarked, because that's something I want to work on. You said that, and, you know, in keeping with that same line of thought, you said anyone who could gently raise her focus to the middle of her forehead or his forehead and hold attention there will experience a remarkable change in attitude. So it's not just about getting information, but it's about our general attitude about life, right?
So the crown chakra at the top of the head is the bridge to the spiritual world, and is the key chakra to access guidance from the spiritual world. But the third eye in the middle of the forehead is the key center of wisdom and discernment in our own perception. And it's the center that integrates spiritual insight into practical details. So it serves a different role. Both are equally important. And the third eye is activated through focus and concentration, where the crown is activated through inspiration. So I have a whole chapter devoted to how I learned about the power of the third eye. And my guides say when you open two eyes, open three, because the third eye gives you the spiritual perspective and the physical eyes give you the physical perspective. And together they give you an integration which equals wisdom. And I have found that most of my clients and students have lived their life focused in the gut. And it's actually a popular notion, follow your gut. But my guides say that's a mistake. They say that the gut or the solar plexus chakra is the center of emotion and feeling, and that perception should inform feeling, and that the third eye is the center of clear perception. So I teach everyone I work with the comparison of perception from the solar plexus to the third eye, because it's so significant. And I can tell you, after working with thousands of people, that people who are anxious in the solar plexus are not anxious from the third eye. People who are confused are clear from the third eye. That the third eye, one of my great aspirations is to create a cultural paradigm shift to move people into focus and concentration and activation of the third eye, because then people would move into wise decision making, and it has such a big impact, the decisions that we make.
Oh, what a world that would be.
Mm. Well, yes.
Well, I hope you succeed in that mission.
Thank you.
I do.
Well, you're helping me by interviewing me. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get this information out. So, Ellen, as we come down to nearing the end of the show, we're speaking, for my listeners, we're speaking to Ellen Ted today about her life and her book, The Infinite View, A Guidebook for Life on Earth. And if you've been listening to the show, you have gotten a lot of valuable tools and information for finding your own life purpose. So, Ellen, how do we contact you? Do you have an email, website?
I have a website. It's simply ellentadd.com, and my last name is spelled with two D's, T-A-D-D. And I have a Facebook page and Twitter account. And my book, The Infinite View, is, I feel so pleased that published by Penguin Random House, so it's available where books are sold.
Wow, I know what a feat that is to be able to get traditionally published. So congratulations on that, and I wish you great success with this book. And I know it's not for you to get rich on, but you want this information out, and the more exposure you have, the better we can all work together on this earth, right?
Yes, absolutely. And now is such an important time. There's a lot of change happening, and there are a lot of important decisions to be made for people individually and for all of us collectively. And so we really need to rely on wisdom. And,
yes.
Wisdom is very different than the intellect. The intellect is a great tool, like a computer, but wisdom is the ability to see the far-reaching impact. It's a very different faculty, and it's activated through focus and concentration.
Well, thank you for writing the first guidebook for life on Earth. We certainly need it, every
one
of us.
I don't know if it is.
It's been just such a pleasure having you. I've really enjoyed this. So thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you. I really greatly appreciate it. Take care.
Okay. I wish you well. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. And I hope you'll join me next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing. I wish you serenity and joy in your life always. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.